O captain, my captain, our fearful trip is done. The ship has weathered every rack. The prize we sought is won.
Walt Whitman wrote, O Captain, My Captain, his most famous poem about the assassination of his hero, President Abraham Lincoln.
Where on the deck my captain lies, fallen, cold, and dead.
Poets have long concerned themselves with trying to make sense of troubled times. I'm Sarah McConnell, and today on With Good Reason, a modern poet's lament for Detroit and the collapse of the automobile industry. Bob Hickok is a professor of creative writing at Virginia Tech. He worked for more than 20 years in the automotive industry in his home state of Michigan. Hickok has received a lot of recognition for his poems about economic hardship in Michigan and was awarded a Guggenheim Fellowship for his work.
Michigan was always factories and farms to me. And you see things now that I don't remember seeing and probably weren't common in the States since the Depression. People moving back in with parents or moving in with friends, people certainly being out on the street. The auto industry has been hurting for a long time. So you see this movement both home and out of the state.
Kind of Michigan diaspora.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that word, although it's almost never associated with anything good. I've never heard of the ice cream diaspora. But I tend to go back a couple times a year.
Was it much of a transition for you to move from Michigan to rural Virginia Tech?
Yes and no. Our house looks out on the mountains. And the woman who sold us the house said that we'd end up thinking of the mountains like the ocean. She said they're really not ever the same twice. And there's something to that. But there are some similarities. This is not a wealthy area, and a great deal of Michigan is... They've been struggling there economically. So to go from that to a tenured track position because of poetry is one of the stranger things in my life. Poetry has given me a level of security and comfort that the more traditional expected route wouldn't at this point.
You have a poem, My New Neighbor, and I think it really says it all about what you found when you came to the Catawba Valley, just outside Virginia Tech where you live. Would you read me My New Neighbor?
Sure. Looking at a cow one morning last month, I wondered if the congregation of flies on the eye of the cow stared at the eye of the cow with their compound eyes. And if I had ever seen this many eyes in this small a space, or had a thought in which the word I occurred so obsessively. I wanted to touch the cow, and the cow seemed to ask to be touched. But when I moved toward the fence, the cow waddled away and the flies waddled with it. The cow had a metal tag in its ear, orange with the black numeral 42. This will help them make hamburger of the cow, which is the calling of cows in these parts. I confess to 42 that I eat cheeseburgers. I had never addressed my food before. It had reached the plate, and technically not even then. What would I say to chicken teriyaki by way of lessening the blow or making it feel welcome? 42 has large brown eyes and lives in a field beside a small Presbyterian church. I guess this makes 42 a God-fearing cow, and all cows have large brown eyes if 73 and 12 are a fair sampling. They pretty much do what 42 does 7 days a week, which is eat, and which suggests they are atheists after all. Because of this philosophical bent, I have taken to asking 42 if agnosticism is the most reasonable position. My thought being that the mind cannot dispense with the notion of a first cause. When 42 blinks at my question, the flies lift off and come back to what must be their home planet. It is comforting to talk to large animals, whether they listen or not. I said it is comforting to talk to large animals, whether they listen or not.
I'm listening.
I've really come to like cows. although given what's in the offing for most of them, I don't think I would commit to the lifestyle.
You know, you wrote the poem A Primer that ran in The New Yorker in May of 2008. I'd like you to read that also.
A Primer. I remember Michigan fondly as the place I go to be in Michigan. The right hand of America waving from maps, or the left pressing into clay a mold to take home from kindergarten to mother. I lived in Michigan 43 years. The state bird is a chained factory gate. The state flower is Lake Superior, which sounds egotistical, though it is merely cold and deep as truth. A Midwesterner can use the word truth, can sincerely use the word sincere. In truth, the Midwest is not mid or west. When I go back to Michigan, I drive through Ohio. There is off I-75 in Ohio a mosque, so life goes corn, 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 mosque. I wave at Islam, which we're not getting along with on account of the towers as I pass. Then Ohio goes corn, 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 billboard, goodbye, Islam. You never forget how to be from Michigan when you're from Michigan. It's like riding a bike of ice and fly fishing. The Upper Peninsula is a spare state in case Michigan goes flat. I live now in Virginia, which has no backup plan but is named the same as my mother. I live in my mother again, which is creepy, but so is what the skin under my chin is doing. Suddenly, there's a pouch like marsupials are needed. The state joy is spring. Osiris, we beseech thee, rise and give us baseball, as how we might sound were we Egyptian in April, when February hasn't ended. February is 13 months long in Michigan. We are a people who by February want to kill the sky for being so gray and angry at us. What did we do is the state motto. There's a day in May when we're all tumblers. Gymnastics is everywhere, and daffodils are asked by young men to be their wives. When a man elopes with a daffodil, you know where he's from. In this way, I have given you a primer. Let us all be from somewhere. Let us tell each other everything we can.
I saw another interview in which someone asked you what advice you had for poets fresh out of graduate school. And you said something like, make sure you bring me my root beer the way I ordered it. Which means you won't make a living, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The odds are terrible that anyone's going to roll out of one of these places and into the kind of job that they want.
But I imagine you never recommend against people studying poetry in these tough times. Really?
I do. Yeah. When an undergraduate who has talent will come by and they'll say, I'm thinking of getting an MFA. And the first question I always ask them is, do you have money? Do you come from money? And so far no one has said yes, because if they say they do, I'd say, great, don't go. You don't need to. You will develop, if you really want to do this, you will develop on your own or by working with people you meet along the way. It's really only the ones who say that they want to teach. I'll ask them that too. I say, do you want to teach? I say, well, you have to. You have to go to a writing program. You, by and large, are not going to be able to get a job without that master's degree, that terminal degree. But I also tell them, do not expect a job at the other end of this. And it's a hard thing to say, but it actually pleases me, because the way poets get jobs is in part based on that credential. But it's still remarkably pure in that it's largely based on your writing. You have to publish, and you have to publish books, and people have to show an interest in them. If that happens, you will be in the running for jobs.
You know, in hard times like these, it can be hard to justify expenditures on things like poetry and the humanities. What do you think about setting aside money for the humanities and for the arts during hard times when some people are struggling just to pay bills and keep their mortgage and food payments up?
I've always found this question interesting. The arts don't go away. Poetry does not go away. Poetry is such a tiny thing in this country. Practically speaking, there's no money in it. There's no money offered to it. But it doesn't die. And that's always suggested to me that the arts are so fundamental to human nature, human existence, that it's a fundamental mistake not to support them as best you can. And certainly now, I would have no expectation that someone is going to look at a loaf of bread and a poet and say, well, you know, the poet needs to come first. But you can look at the effects in schools of people who've had music training and art training. They end up being better, fuller. They end up being smarter. Whether they go on to play the tuba or the piccolo ever again, there's a way in which the arts, I think, are an easy target. Look how silly this stuff is. Look how irrelevant it is. So let's zero out that budget line. But when we do it, we're largely wiping ourselves away.
Bob Hickok is a professor of creative writing at Virginia Tech. Coming up next, an exploration of the emptying nest through poetry.